We were going to talk about homeless people in shelters today anyway, but this first winter storm of the year added urgency to the issue of people seeking shelter. The storm posed problems for anyone trying to get anywhere, bigger problems for people without permanent homes. JPR's April Ehrlich reports from an emergency shelter at the Ashland Public Library.
Icy winds howled outside as people huddled in sleeping bags, blankets, whatever they could find that padded them against the hard floor of a library boardroom. One woman squeezed a stuffed bear against her chest. The Ashland Public Library is the only emergency warming shelter in Jackson and Josephine counties tonight. The service was organized by a volunteer group called Southern Oregon Jobs for Justice, and the library provided the space.
If they hadn't stepped up, there would be no shelter tonight.
Jason Houck leads the group. He says they organize a winter shelter every year, but this year was a struggle.
One of the biggest challenges we're finding is lack of space, lack of public space.
Houck says the storm's timing couldn't be worse. With just days before Thanksgiving, most churches are busy organizing meals and bazaars, so they don't have the space or the time to help. Claudine Tylak with Jackson County Library Services says they stepped in once they heard there was a need.
The library really is the only place that exists that serves the entire community, the whole county, with no expectation of anything back in return. And so they're crucial to people who are traveling or living unhoused.
But the service was organized at the last minute. Word didn't get out about the library shelter until the middle of the day. At that point, local nonprofits started sending people who needed shelter to the library, which wasn't yet prepared for them or their dogs. That included Teresa Avalos and her service dog, Mocha.
I was told by a shelter that I could stay here and be warm.
During our conversation, a librarian asked why she had a service dog and exactly what her disability was because, quote, if it's mental, it doesn't count. And that hurt.
Mental health is real. Nobody chooses to go through things. Nobody chooses to go through bad things. Nobody chooses to be homeless.
Teresa suffers from several traumas, including being molested and raped as a child. She says Mocha helps her feel safe. Library managers have since made it clear that it's not their policy to ask people about their disabilities. Still, it put Teresa on edge about whether she and Mocha were welcome.
Yeah, he keeps me sane. He's my baby. And just to go through all of that, and people are supposed to protect you when they don't.
Ashland isn't the only city struggling to provide warming shelters for people who need them. Medford and Grants Pass don't have any warming center. All three cities do have more permanent shelters, but they're what some homeless advocates call high barriers, in that people need to pass background checks and they can't use any substances like alcohol or drugs. Some shelters even require that they attend religious services. Houck says that's why Ashland's library shelter is necessary to fill the gaps, even if it can't provide beds.
The need for shelter is incredible. You know, even this shelter isn't going to meet the need.
Houck says he's still looking for volunteers. He hopes that the upcoming holidays will inspire people to help others who are enduring the cold. April Ehrlich, JPR News.
April tells us the Ashland Warming Center will move to the Bellevue Grange on Tolman Creek Road on Wednesday and Thursday night, so tonight and Thanksgiving night, and then back to the Ashland Library on Friday night. The short-term shelter situation caused by the winter storm came less than a week after a new permanent shelter opened in Medford. The Kelly Shelter takes the place of a temporary shelter that started a few years ago. It provides 54 beds and is operated by Rogue Retreat, which operates several facilities for homeless people. Matthew Vorderstrauss is the development director at Rogue Retreat and our guest by phone from Medford, so he didn't have to brave the storm. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So it was a bit of a long road to the Kelly Shelter. Tell us about its earlier incarnations.
Yeah, well, initially, the Kelly Shelter started as a winter warming shelter, as you stated. And that started in 2017. And the first year that we were operating primarily off volunteers. And we had space in the basement of the Methodist Church in Medford, and we had a room for 50 people. And that first year, we learned a lot of lessons and took a lot of black eyes in the media for just some of the different things that we went through learning on how to operate a shelter. And the second year, we sat down with the city and devised a better operational plan. And so from year one to year two, we structured the shelter as a professional shelter and staffed it and case managed it rather than just relying on volunteers. And as a result, really kind of created a model shelter for how to professionally run a shelter that provides case management to people. And so after that second year, operations became very smooth. And then this year in particular, we had the opportunity to partner with Access because they had a significant amount of funding to be able to leverage into creating and enhancing more shelter beds in Jackson County. And so through that partnership, the Access invested about $1.2 million into purchasing a new shelter facility and renovating it. And as of last week, we were able to open the first low-barrier shelter that is open year-round in Jackson County that houses 54 individuals.
We got that little inkling of low barrier versus high barrier from April Ehrlich's report. So explain what goes on at the Kelly Shelter and what the options were as you considered how to set it up.
Yeah, well, basically we are working with the Jackson County Continuum of Care. And what we did was we looked at the operational model of what is really needed in Jackson County. And one of the things that we came up with was we did not want to have a high barrier shelter because one of the things that we know is that if you place sobriety requirements or those kind of things as a barrier for people to access shelter, it'll cut out a number of people that are needing the service but wouldn't qualify. And so the idea with low barrier, when we came up with that plan for going operationally in that direction, the idea with low barrier is that we meet people where they're currently at. And then through case management and everything, we then begin addressing the barriers that led them to us in the first place. Through the relationship that we're developing with them, but we don't have any requirements up front for them to have to adhere to these specific things to be able to qualify for the program.
When you talk about meeting people where they're at, what does that mean in terms of the sorts of things they're dealing with and need some attention?
Well, you know, for some folks, where they're at, they could have mental health issues. For other folks, they could have addiction issues. And then for some individuals, they are homeless because purely just because of circumstance where they got priced out of their own housing, but they're employed. And so when we talk about being low barrier, we really don't place a whole lot of emphasis on what brought them to us in order to bring them into the program, if that makes sense. Instead, we look at really kind of their vulnerability and why they need, how they need the program. And then we try to figure out how we can wrap around to begin addressing those supports after we get their basic needs met.
Okay. So it's, we're dealing with what you're bringing to us and we'll help you deal with those issues.
Exactly. In most cases with the Kelly Shelter, people are agreeing to behave appropriately. And as long as their behavior does not put the safety of others at risk and themselves at risk, then they'll be able to be in the program.
Matthew Vorderstrasser, our guest on the Geverson Exchange. He's the development director at Rogue Retreat, which operates the Kelly Shelter that opened just last week in Medford. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about housing the homeless in emergencies and more long term. 800-838-3760 for your phone calls. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So who is eligible then to go into the Kelly Shelter and what pre-requirements do they have just to be able to get in there?
You know, the big thing to require for or to be able to qualify for the Kelly Shelter is an individual needs to be literally homeless, and they also need to just be not predatory.
Is it a show up and stay situation, or is there some pre-screening available that you do?
So what we do is we work with the Jackson County Continuum of Care. So we have an application and screening or an assessment process that we do at our office at Rogue Retreat. And then also people can access or get assessed and also sign up for the shelter through Access and Maslow Project and other COC access points. What we do is we basically just do a simple application where we collect their information, but then we do a vulnerability index score where we will basically go through a series of trauma-informed questions to assess the level of vulnerability that a person's currently at. And what that then does is when they're entered into the coordinated entry list, the higher their vulnerability score, the further up the list they go to, so that ideally they will access services quicker.
So if people are moving up the list, does it indicate that there is a waiting list? I can imagine the Kelly Shelter probably was full from day one, wasn't it?
The Kelly Shelter was definitely full from day one, and that's one of the unfortunate pieces is that there's 54 beds, but we know that there are much more than 54 homeless individuals experiencing homelessness on the streets. And so, sadly, there is a wait list for the program, but we go through the coordinated entry process for people to be able to access that. And so ideally, we are taking in the people with the most need.
As April Ehrlich explained in her report, there is a lack of cold weather beds in the region. So give us your sense of the overall picture of shelters and availability of shelter beds in the Medford area. I mean, this certainly takes care of some of it, but I would imagine it's a much larger issue than this.
Oh, it certainly is. You know, and I must say that between access, the continuum of care, and also the city of Medford, they are moving in a direction of trying to address the issue. I know that right now the city of Medford has really kind of pushed forward on an inclement weather ordinance to help mobilize and create emergency shelters for when the temperature dips below a certain point, much like they do in Ashland. So I must say that the city is at least they're moving in that direction. The only thing is that there's just not enough resources out there for all the need for shelter. And so currently, it's really kind of Kelly Shelter. You have Medford Gospel Mission. You have Maslow Project. You have March of the Mission. And those are kind of the primary. And then you also have St. Vincent de Paul for it with their family shelter and also Salvation Army. But the resources and the bandwidth of these organizations is not enough for the current need.
And it's not like you could just throw open the doors someplace and have one volunteer, as you found out, didn't you, through operating the Kelly Shelter originally?
Yeah. The first year of running primarily only off volunteers did not go as smooth as it should. And so what we found going forward with the shelter is that we really needed the dedication of having dedicated staff within the shelter to make it operate.
So Rogue Retreat has several different facilities that approach the housing of homeless people. I mean, are people likely to move from the Kelly Shelter to another one of those facilities? What is the trajectory envisioned for people who come through the Kelly Shelter?
Well, ideally, what we want to be able to see with having people come to the Kelly Shelter is that will be essentially the first stop of coming into our services. And ideally, when we get people into the bed and we have that roof over their head and all of a sudden their basic needs are met, we can begin that process of helping de-escalate them out of the crisis that they were in. Because oftentimes people don't realize it, but when people are experiencing homelessness, they're in crisis. The majority of your time is spent figuring out how you're going to meet your basic needs. Where are you going to eat? Where are you going to shower? And usually by the time that you figure out how to meet those needs, the day's over. And you have to start that cycle over again. So when we bring people into the Kelly Shelter, what we want to do is be able to de-escalate them out of that cycle. And once we're able to do that, then our case management is able to make more of an impact and begin addressing the barriers that led them to us in the first place. And so ideally, what we'd like to be able to see is for as quickly as possible, once we begin engaging them in those case management services, is that we are establishing action plans and we are beginning to make that process of identifying how we're going to transition them into someplace more permanent. And for many of those folks, that might be transitioning over to Hope Village, which is our tiny house village for the homeless that we have. For other folks, they might go into one of our recovery houses. For some of our other folks, they might end up qualifying to go into one of our apartments. And so it's a matter of just getting people into the shelter to stabilize them and then figuring out what their most realistic options are.
Well, we talked about the cost of creating the Kelly Shelter in its current form. $1.2 million, is that to buy and to renovate or just to buy?
That was the purchase and renovation of the building that accessed it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that's a big figure, provide room for this many people. And obviously it gets expensive, particularly in a market where housing is tight, to create more spaces like this. Where did Access come up with the money to be able to do the building and the renovation?
So Access received a grant from the state of Oregon to be able to expand shelter beds in Jackson County.
And then how do you pay for the operation of the Kelly Shelter, Matt?
So, it's leveraged. We are contracted as a subcontractor with Access to help support shelter operations. We are also contracted with both coordinated care organizations, Jackson Care, Connect Mental Care, that help us pay for our case management services throughout our entire agency. And then we also just recently received a rather large business sponsorship from Anderson, Lindhorst, and Morse, the law firm, to help. And we're leveraging funding from multiple sources, but a lot of it is going to be dependent on trying to identify how we're going to have renewable revenue. So right now we're having a lot of grant funding coming through to help with the stand-up of it. But going forward, we're going to have to figure out a way to expand contracts that can help sustain operations going forward.
I get the sense of grant writers working fast and furious to make sure that they can keep the money coming in.
Yes, my fingers do get tired.
I can imagine you were one of the grant writers.
Yes. My job as the development director is to basically coordinate the fundraising and grant writing efforts for Rogue Retreats and help leverage in resources to help programs operate.
So, you know, you had enough reps with the Kelly Shelter as it existed previously before it moved into the permanent space. Was it November 21st that it moved in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So you had some operational ideas here. I mean, have things gone relatively smoothly in this first week, or were some things you learned even in these early days that you might have to do some tweaking on?
You know, actually, it has been exceptionally smooth down at the Kelly Shelter. I know one of the bigger things that we had to kind of smooth out once we began opening are just basic operational things, such as the schedule for how to make lunches and everything. I know that they were just going through that yesterday, but it's been fairly smooth, but the different things that we've been smoothing out are just smaller operational issues.
By the way, our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange is Matthew Vorderstrauss. He's the development director at Rogue Retreat. We're talking about the opening of the Kelly Shelter, a 54-bed homeless shelter in Medford, a permanent shelter, not one that closes up every day, but it is there every day. And you can join our conversation on the Exchange as we talk about addressing the needs of homeless people, 800-838-3760 to call in, or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. How much more stress is placed on the system of caring for homeless people when you've got a holiday, B, a major winter weather event, and in the case of this week, both?
Oh, it's significant. Anytime you have weather alone drop the way that it has lately, it increases the urgency for shelter. And then you add in on top of that the holiday and everything else, and with everything closing and the options and the resources around people that are experiencing homelessness dwindle and shrink. And so it is absolutely essential right now to have shelter opportunities out there for people.
Does anybody have a sense of, I mean, based on the homeless headcounts, what, maybe a quarter of the people who are looking for shelter are getting it on any given day?
Yeah, that would probably be a good estimate.
Mm-hmm. So what are the next steps for Rogue Retreat? What else is envisioned?
Oh, going forward?
Yes.
Well, you know, ideally right now what we are going to be focused on is just finishing out, just ironing out the operations of Kelly Shelter now that it's open year-round. We will continue going forward to try to raise more revenue into the program to really kind of help sustain it and move it forward. But then on the horizon, we're another big project that we're working on is Foundry Village out in Grants Pass and bringing Grants Pass and Josephine County its first tiny house community that can help serve the homeless.
In thinking about homelessness in the region, I mean, these are cities that people do move a fair amount between, Grants Pass, Medford, and Ashland. Are you trying to think in holistic terms like that, or do you get some obstacles of jurisdictions getting in the way, like dealing with the Jackson County continuum of care versus, say, Josephine County?
You know, we actually haven't ran into any major issues along those lines, understanding that moving from Jackson County to Josephine County, you are moving into a different municipal system. But we haven't encountered anything egregious that is really anything different than what we're dealing with in Jackson County.
How long a waiting list do you have then for the Kelly Shelter? If you got 54 beds, you mentioned moving people up in priority based on what their issues are. How many people are at the bottom of that list and don't get in?
Well, the total list that we referenced for with the coordinated entry for bringing people in, just for to kind of give you a visual, we signed up over 100 individuals at our office alone this year. The coordinate entry list had over 1,500 individuals on it that were, some of them had been on there since last year. They had not been served any new services yet. And so there is a large list out there that we were pulling from.
Are there any particular success stories to point to at this point? I mean, I imagine there'd have to be a few people who you'd be able to deal with on an emergency basis and then move into longer term care.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit early at this point to really identify any success stories, but there are a couple that I want to see in the next couple of weeks that I believe will be a success story. There were a few folks that we brought in that when we had first encountered them, our first concern was that they weren't going to survive the winter, and we were just grateful that we were able to pull them into our program. And so at this point, I'm kind of looking at that as a success. But a week in, it's a little bit early to really identify the bigger success stories that would get a lot of media coverage.
Right. But I did mean before the permanent shelter opened too, whether you've been able to, have been people you've moved through the system completely, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the biggest success stories with that I like to point out is about 10 of our staff that are currently actually working at Rogue Retreat A lot of them, they actually started at the Kelly Shelter, and we've built them up over the last few years through our programs and are now actually staffed within our agency. And a number of them are working at the year-round shelter, which is absolutely phenomenal because their heart for the work that we're doing is amazing.
That should provide some benefits all around. You've got people who are on staff who know exactly what the concerns are of some of the people coming in through the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the big things that we've done with our staff that are down there, especially our staff that have lived experience, is we've invested in having them also get certified as peer support specialists. So their tool bag for how they're able to help people not only can stem now from their lived experience, but also the education that they've received.
So does it feel, I mean, granted, in no particular day, do you feel like you're having particular, large-scale success with this many people still out on the streets, but does it feel like you've gotten to some corner turned or at least seeing further down the tunnel or something with homelessness, having opened the Kelly Shelter?
Absolutely. You know, one of the big things that I think that this is the success of this is a bigger indication of is the public acceptance of the need for providing these types of services. Homelessness has grown substantially over the last few years, and it's something that we can't really ignore anymore. And so I look at the opening of the Kelly Shelter being the first low barrier year-round shelter in Jackson County as a sign of the public's opinion turning the corner for us being able to really focus on solutions.
All right. The Kelly Shelter has 54 beds in Medford, open as of last week. Matt Vorderstrass is the development director at Rogue Retreat, which operates it. Access helped get it built. And the renovation of an older building in downtown Medford. Matt, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange once again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You bet. That'll do it for this portion of the Exchange. A short break, back with Marketplace Tech.